Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Women Take Charge from the Evening Standard. Oh, sorry. And don't worry, there are no No, I have to sing it again. I'm the mathematician, not the English person. Now I can't even talk. Women Take Charge from the Evening Standard is back. Was that too loud? Hi, I'm Anne-Marie Mathedon, and welcome to Series 2 of Women Take Charge. This season, we're talking to amazing women doing incredible things in science and tech and engineering and maths and all the STEMs, because all of them are in there together.
And I said, Dad, I don't like it out there. He said, no worries, Toots. We can put the cart back in the truck and head home, or you go back out and you just try and go quicker, and when they're going to bump you, you're going to bump them back twice as hard.
Regarding The Mandalorian, it's a little bit of old school and it's a little bit of new school. I think that's where visual effects really succeed.
How does one go about getting a watch named after them by Microsoft?
Magic and fleet.
It's showtime. Let's start with a bang or a paso doble.
Oh.
Rachel Riley is here. She's a presenter, a mathematician, an occasional dancer, and a soon-to-be mum.
Yeah, very occasional dancer these days. I can't get close to the pasha. He's like, now you finally got the posture because your bodies are supposed to be touching, but we're still a foot apart. Nailed it.
But I'd say you're a Rachel.
Yeah.
This is my thing.
I don't claim to be a woman in tech. I just claim to be a math enthusiast. I've got a master's in math.
Well,
I
more
love
than
it.
Enthusiast if you did
well,
masters.
And, you know, spread maths positivity.
Yes.
But I don't fit into the box.
Any of the boxes.
I'm not working in tech and I don't claim to be.
And that is the job? If someone says, what do you do? What's the first? Do you say, I, Rachel. Should you say I, Rachel?
Well, it's one of those things that was really embarrassing. You know, when you go to America and you have to tick, you know, what's your occupation?
Yeah.
For ages, TV presenter was just, am I? Is that a real thing? But I go with it now.
Oh, I've got one bone to pick with you, actually, that
go
I'm going to say. So apparently you once described your job on Countdown as the one cool maths job around.
That was like when I was 22.
You were young and foolish, is that what you're
I was 22 and I went from university to clothes budget.
Do you get the spare from your clothes budget?
There is no,
no
spare.
Expenses only.
Yeah, use it or lose it. Especially now, more material.
Why did you apply?
I always liked puzzles. That's what I liked about maths. So I always enjoyed the countdown game and used to play against my little brother. You know, it's 4 o'clock was 15 to one, 4:30 was countdown. And then I might do a little bit of homework later, maybe. So I just liked it and I just applied on the off chance. It was, you know, I was at the time all of these job applications were absolute tomes. When have you worked as a team? When have you overcome adversity? When have you done this, that, the other? Yep. And it was 50 words and a photo for a countdown.
Yeah.
Why would you be good? Stand out.
Okay. And that was written.
That was my first written thing after uni. 50 words.
50 words. 50 I could do. My thing was always 300 words or less, I'm okay.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it's feeling like work. So you did the 50 words and then you auditioned. Did you have one audition? Did you have five?
They called me into the ITV studios on the embankment and I think they interviewed 100 people. We sat in a room and had a chat with two producers and they gave me a bunch of countdown numbers puzzles whilst they sat and stared at you. And it was 2008, so they had a CD player and they'd press play and the countdown music would play. And then after a couple of rounds, when people stare at you when you do maths, it's quite, I mean, people...
You feel like Dance Monkey Dance. That's always my thing. People always are like, you're a maths genius. What's 52 times? Yeah. And I'm like, this is not how I do my maths.
No, yeah, exactly. And there's a maths phase and there's a reason for that. It's just putting people under pressure.
Yeah.
It's not what maths is about, but... The after a couple of countdown rounds with them staring at me, the actual CD player broke. So then they still had a couple more maths questions. They started telling me numbers like as he was going, it'd be like 10 seconds, 15 seconds, 20 seconds. You're thinking in numbers and someone's shouting numbers at you,
it's
just like patting your head and rubbing your tummy.
Yeah.
But obviously it went all right because then they got me back for a screen test. So they took six of us up for screen tests, which was like a 3-hour thing in the studio in Leeds. I got the job.
So who was the first person you told?
I was supposed to hear, I think, maybe the Friday or over the weekend. And every time my phone went, my mum would be like, and look at me and stare at me. And it's like, it's just Siobhan or whatever.
You're making this worse, mum.
And then, by Monday, I hadn't heard. And I was like, well, it's obviously not going to happen. So by the time I did get the call, my mum was like dishing up dinner and didn't pay any attention at all. So I went in the other room, took the call, was like, okay. Walked back into the kitchen, just like holding my hat, you know, my phone, like, what's just happened? And my mom, she didn't notice for like a good, you know, 30 seconds. And she turned around and she was like, what? She was so funny, especially to start with, because I had to keep it quiet for a little while.
Okay.
And like, I'd be in the car as she'd like get out and she'd be in the butcher's buying something. And you could see her having a chat with the butcher and then the guy's like head turning to the car and you're like sinking in, like she's told someone else.
What was the weirdest or what was the strangest person that was like, oh my gosh, I've just seen you on Channel 4?
One day that it was out by accident somehow and the papers were on my doorstep, which was my parents' doorstep because I was obviously living at home. And then I was in all the papers and I was thinking, is everyone going to recognise me now? Am I famous now?
Have I made it?
You realise it's not like that at all. So you can be on Countdown for ages and people still don't know who you are, which is great. But contrast that with I did one thing for Manchester United, which hadn't even been broadcast, but they were just promoting the advert for it.
Right.
And I was getting stopped at Old Trafford. It was
like,
I was like, oh, okay. My dad, quote unquote, said, I finally made it. I get Asian tourists that come over to Old Trafford, like, the you know, they do the pilgrimage.
Yeah.
They recognise me from Man U TV.
That's insane. More than Countdown.
Yeah.
Or 8 out of 10 cats.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that most people want to chat about. Just, you know, person on the street.
That's become it.
Yeah.
Is that as fun as it looks to record?
Yeah, it's great.
Is it more fun than it looks to record?
Well, I'm a massive comedy fan. Yeah, most of it gets cut. Exactly. Most of it's career-ending stuff. There's probably some editors that are making a few quid on the side with a few, you know...
Offcuts.
Yeah.
Would you ever, if someone said you had to choose, would you choose 8 out of 10 over Main Countdown?
I would probably, to be honest, choose Countdown because... I get to do more numbers games on Countdown.
There's numbers
there
on.
There are. There's two per show.
You have to do
cats,
all. You have to do most of the number work on 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
I love both. To be honest, they're completely different jobs. They're different production teams. They're just in the same studio.
Oh.
And I love working on both. But I mean, I've done Countdown almost 11 years now. And the production team, they're like family. And we have a good giggle. They're the producers from Blackpool, the rudest, cleverest man you'll ever meet. Yeah, and he's like my big brother or something. So
let's dive into the maths.
Let's.
Because I like maths. Hey. I also did it at Oxford as well.
Yeah.
And you were at Oriel.
Uh-huh.
Which was I don't know if it's a posh college. What do you call
it?
No,
it was known as, in inverted commas, the friendly college. Because I went to Cambridge and didn't like it at all and was really put off. And I found them really pretentious and I just didn't like it. So I thought Oxford would be the same. And then Mum said, oh, you know, how about we do this? And she picked it because it was called the Friendly College and it was right in the middle of town. That's how I ended up there.
It is right outside the shops.
Right in the middle of the shops.
Right next to Jigsaw. I don't know if Jigsaw's still there. And Pizza Hut is on that corner
cover
as well.
Cover Market.
And the Cover Market. All of it is there.
We did have our fair share of kebab vans in equidistant choices. Yeah. It was brilliant.
Although I never would eat from kebab vans because they don't have running water. No offence to anyone that runs a kebab van.
I don't know. Back in the day, 19 years old, chips and cheese, end
of the
night.
I thought about it too much.
You're too sensible.
Like, when did you wash your hands? I don't want to eat your food. So after that, you went off to Deutsche, which I didn't realise until I got my briefing pack for
this. I did an internship there for a summer. So I was on a Deutsche Bank prop desk.
Can you explain prop trading to anyone who might not know what that is?
It's a trading desk, but it was to benefit the bank. So the money was actually Deutsche Bank's money. So that was investing money for Deutsche Bank and trading for Deutsche Bank. And they spun off into a hedge fund. So it's basically a hedge fund internally for Deutsche Bank.
So prop was short for proprietary.
Thank you very much.
just to round that off.
So I was there just for a couple of months trying out investment banking, which was 2007,
which was the time
when the markets first crashed.
This is radical action across the system, the restructuring of banks under the conditions set down.
We are not seeking to take public control of these institutions.
Where's the money gone? Are you mad?
So the first half of the summer, everyone was helping and everyone was swanning in.
The champagne was flowing.
Yeah. And then the second half of the summer.
The sky went dark.
It did. Yeah. I mean, there was no time to teach us anything because the sky was falling in.
Yeah.
And they, you know, it was unprecedented. And I thought, this isn't for me. It just didn't appeal to me that we weren't making anything. I didn't feel like we were doing anything. I felt we were just, someone was winning and someone was losing. Mm. And I tried it and it wasn't for me.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
I found it really difficult trying to find an applied maths job out of uni. I mean, the people that came to Oxford to try and recruit you were the people with money. So it was lawyers, it was management consultants. Mm. And that was pretty much it that was coming for the mathematicians. So I'd go out and I...
There was that and there was like the tap on the shoulder.
I didn't give no one tap me on the shoulder. But I did go to, I think, you know, at the NEC, there's a huge science careers fair and I'd go there and I'd say to companies, I'm about to finish, you know, 4 years at Oxford, I've done maths, mostly applied, what would I be able to do in your company? Yeah.
And they didn't have a clue at the time.
Oh, really?
I think there's a kind of a disjoint between what universities teach and what companies need or what they know you're learning. Because they're like, you'll probably have to do loads of courses on fluids. I'm like, half my degree's on fluids.
Yeah.
So I was looking at going back into education to do something that would get me in there.
Degree.
But in the meantime, got a job as a data analyst. At a startup company, really entrepreneurial, small, really bright people. I was only ultimately there 2 months before I left for Countdown.
To go up today. That frustrates me a little bit.
That I left for Countdown?
No, of course. No, Mike, that's great. I mean, do you? No, it frustrates me a little bit that with a master's in maths, that people still didn't, like accounting was what was thrown back at
you. Yeah, it frustrated me as well. I think maths kind of can get a little bit forgotten, even within STEM. Mm. It's quite easy. You need maths for the rest of the STEM. But mathematicians, I think they're probably an underused resource because a lot of people, they do it because they love it and they actually do want to use their degrees afterwards. But the opportunities
aren't necessarily that big.
I think you have to really look for them. And out of six of us that were doing math at the time, one boy went and used his applied maths, and he went to AWE at the time, Atomic Weapons Establishment. So that was, you know,
for some, not exactly. For many, yeah.
And everyone else, I mean, I ended up on Countdown, and I think we've got, you know, a couple of accountants and management consultants.
So I did want to talk about technology just a little bit because it means a lot of things to lots of different people.
Yeah.
And say, what's the best thing about being on social media and online, and what's the one thing you want to see changed?
The best thing, people used to contact me and ask for like help with their maths homework or their kids' maths homework, and the only thing I wouldn't even call it contentious, but the only thing I'd get into a heated debate with anyone about was women in STEM.
Really?
Yeah. People will come out with a comment that's just based on no evidence and internal bias and all sorts of things that are just provably wrong. And you could use that to kind of show other people, actually, this is why this is wrong. This isn't, you know, evidence.
Were you always fighting then on Twitter?
Not always. No. I once tweeted I was going to a charity dog show and I was looking forward to cuddling the dogs, and I got told some dogs don't like being cuddled.
Wow. Okay.
You know, so there are people that just like to troll. They just enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
It's been a steep, steep learning curve.
Right.
Because social media us in general, aren't we? We're all in our own little bubbles.
Mm.
So if you don't see what's going on, you don't see what's going on.
Mm.
And when you do see what's going on, but you didn't know it before, and you know that everyone that's just like you doesn't know that this is happening, then that was particularly worrying.
Mm.
Everyone's really reluctant to use Holocaust analogies for anything. But I was recently in LA and I went to the Holocaust Museum, and the part of the display that really spoke to me was about resistors and opposed to collaborators and who was passive and who did something and why.
Yep.
And one of the features was about the railways, mm-hmm. and how the railways enabled the mass murder of millions of people. And the railways themselves aren't inherently bad, people working on the railways aren't inherently bad, but they were used to transport millions and millions of people to their death, and people that were maintaining them or turning a blind eye or helping in some way.
We're enabling,
In some way played a part in that. And the internet itself isn't inherently bad, but the internet is being used in a way now by extremists to mess with democracy, to incite hatred.
Mm.
And they're being used not just to promote hatred, anti-migrant, anti-Islamophobia, anti-Jew. There's groups that promote curing, in inverted commas, your children's autism by giving them bleach enemas. And they're using it for drug trafficking, and they're using it for child paedophilia.
Yeah.
And you can't see that these groups even exist unless you're in them. So actually, I'm supporting a bill. Lucy Powell's trying to get a bill through, which with Brexit has been overlooked, and I hope it'll come through. But we're trying to make the forum runners actually liable for the material on there because it's okay. massive to try and get a tech company to change their ways and to try and stop them making money. But someone needs some responsibility. If you went in the street and you spouted this kind of stuff, you would get arrested. Mm. But you can do it online with tens of thousands of people literally in these groups. And there's no consequences and it's not visible. So
and
we need to change that.
And with the trace. So this is the other thing that I still try to get my head around or kind of normalise in my head is that if someone sent you a message, mm-hmm. even if it is a public one, that's something they've written and they've put it down. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe it's not their name, but it's their account. In yeah. some ways, or in many ways, that is traceable because otherwise the tweet yeah. wouldn't
no,
have gone
often
out.
People are proud of it.
And so, yeah. And so it's really strange because it's like, how is that's worse than you saying it, but you've incriminated yourself in such a big way. Mm-hmm. How is that something that on you know
at the moment there's two spheres of existence. There's the real world where there's social consequences, and then there's the online world where they're kind of on. We've kind of lost that. People are saying things and doing things that they would never do in real life.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a fantastic group that I'm now working with called the Center for Countering Digital Hate. I can't tell you how good these people are, because it is a new phenomenon, social media being used in nefarious ways, or you know, kind of at the detriment of society. And they're actually people, they're getting out there, they're on the front line, they're doing research, they're doing analysis, they're doing actual studies that we can use to see how hate spreads. So they've released the first paper was called Don't Feed the Trolls, and it okay. really helped me online because trolls kind of they hijack your natural instinct to defend yourself or defend what you're talking about, and right. you just assume, as a you know, I would just assume that a little bit of education, a little bit of enlightening would inoculate would people against way. Stuff, but actually no. these people are inside their own social bubble, so you know their numbers of people they can influence are small, and they are using high profile people
to magnify
yeah, it. So yeah. say I've got 600,000 followers. Mm. If 95% of the people see a troll or see what they're saying and think that's appalling, that's horrible,
then they've won.
Great. But 5% of people might think, oh, that's interesting. Mm. Who are these people? And then they're getting outside of their bubble. Mm. So there, you know, I just love the campaign. Sorry, I love the centre of the CCDH because they're talking to experts. They're talking to psychologists, behavioural psychologists, tech people. They're traveling around the world. You know, they're doing the proper scientific method to work out how this thing's happening and what we can do to nip it in the bud. We need to, you know, have more sensible people paying attention and
answering
doing something.
Questions
instead of inciting
yeah, hatred.
Make do maths and not war.
Oh my goodness. Motto of life, do maths, not war.
You know what? That is one of the things that can still totally distract me. That's the one of the things I love about puzzles and maths. Whatever's going on in my head, doing like a maths puzzle just takes me straight to that puzzle, and that's the only thing you're thinking about. And I often, you know, I'm supposed to be doing 10 other things and I get sent something and I'll just sit and do that because I enjoy it.
What's your favourite maths question you've been sent over the years? Is there one that you can pull out and be like, this was it?
Probably not one. There's one account on Twitter called I think she's a teacher called Katrina Shearer.
Shout out to you.
Her little puzzles are brilliant. She makes them all herself, and they're just unique, and they're just different shapes. They look, you can have like a circle and a triangle, and you just the things that she asks you to do with them,
okay.
To work out. They're really cool. They're just really good, and they can take, you know, between 2 minutes and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's the type of puzzles that I really like because it's not knowledge that you need. You just need a little bit of lateral thinking, and you need to think, what do I know? How like, you've got such few bits of information. What can I work out from this? And it's I just love that thought process.
As long as it's maths. So kind of final two questions to you on puzzles. One is, have you seen the GCHQ puzzle book?
I've got both of them.
You've got both of them. So the first one I think we had in the office.
Yeah.
And even from page one, I'm like, this is not maths.
So the second one, well, it's some of it's, you know, it's not maths, but it's lateral thinking, isn't it? It's
I like maths.
Well, some of it you have to know things like the rainbow colours in German, which you're never going to know.
But rainbow colours in German.
Well, some things like that, you know, the patterns that you're spotting.
Maths is hard enough. Like, and I'm saying this as someone that loves maths. It's hard enough to not have to know the rainbow colours
in
German. That feels like physics.
But you just know that, you know, spies or whatever in the 40s, in the 30s, they had to think like this. They had to try and crack the code.
This is why I could never be a spy. I mean, I'm also not very good at keeping secrets. So. My second question to you on problems is around escape rooms.
Ah.
Yay or nay?
I haven't done any.
What?
I haven't done any. I need to.
Oh, come on. Someone out there has got to have Rachel Riley come round.
I do want to because I like puzzles. But would I just be like a real, like the worst person to take into one of those rooms if everyone else wants to have a go? Because I'm just like, let's give it to me.
Well, it is teamwork, I have to say.
I've done the Crystal Maze.
Oh, have you?
I've done the Crystal Maze.
I think they're the Crystal Maze mixed with the GCHQ book.
Okay.
So we went, the team took me for, I've never been to one as well. And maybe it's the thing that mathematicians are just like, it's below me. I don't know. The team took me to one for surprise for my 30th birthday. And I remember being really annoyed because I was like, none of this is like logically connecting to the other thing.
Yeah.
But also me just looking at scraps of paper and trying to pull it together randomly is not a real maths problem.
Someone sent me messages about a pub in Manchester that I've tweeted about Alan Turing because they're obviously big Turing up there. And there's a pub in Manchester that has kind of like drinking versions of, I mean, not that I'm doing that at the moment, but of like little
maths
Turing
problems.
Maths problems over a drink. Lovely.
Drunk maths is an idea.
That's uni.
Like drunk histories. We should pitch that. Drunk maths. You heard it here first. And you just get
drunk and talk
inebriated.
About...
Inebriated. And then do maths.
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't talk about maths. You do the problems whilst inebriated. I mean, I'm endorsing drinking responsibly, of course, and... You know, for anyone that's teetotal, I don't know what you have to spin round loads of times and then do the maths, maybe.
I've recently discovered non-alcoholic beer. It's a whole new world. Years ago, there was a Marcos de Sotoy and Alan Davies program about maths. They did two, but in one of them, they strapped both Dr. Sotoy and Alan into like brain software while they gave them basic sums, like basic stuff like 9 times 7 or whatever.
Yeah. 63.
And Alan nailed it. But Alan was using far less brain power than Marcos de Sotoy doing the same simple sums.
No, that's because, so I was going to say
this.
You put
this, more pressure on yourself.
Not just that, but also higher level maths is not what you do on Countdown.
Oh, no.
What you did in your masters is not Countdown. So I say this to people all the time. You go to university to do maths, you don't see a single number for 4 years.
No, exactly. And people have said to me when I was going to uni, are you allowed to use a calculator in your maths degree? I was like,
probably.
Yeah. They're like, it must be easy then. I was like, well, a calculator in a maths degree is as useful as a calculator in a French degree.
Yeah.
Like, do you think we just times bigger and bigger numbers together? It's not what we do.
So it's like Countdown would not be, like, you've had to train your brain to do the Countdown thing.
No, I had to relearn my times tables
exactly,
to get the job.
Yeah.
I had to buy the puzzle books and practice and practice and practice.
So yeah, so we did this podcast without the help of a calculator. Thank you very much for listening.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
So there was something I did prepare. I've been waiting to use it, but I didn't think it would be useful anyway. And it's going to sound really random. Now I've like built it up too much, but there was this thing I was gonna stop looking. This is
okay.
I'll stop looking.
That thing.
I was just, you know, that Rachel and Amory sitting in a tree multiplying things by 3. I didn't know where it was going to be useful, and now I've said it out loud. No, just crazy things. It's just some. That was it. It was just something. Just some like a little ditty. I thought we'd end up doing maths together, and that could be like a thing,
we
and we'd multiply
can.
Things by 3.
3's nice, 9's lovely, 11's great.
Right, but then if you do 9 again, you get 27. That was where I thought we'd end up. I don't know why I thought we get to 81.
Just a bit of fun.
That doesn't work as an outro, does it?
No. I think we've got it. Bye, guys. Thanks for listening.
It's 108.
108.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.